Chapter 3. Intelligence. The mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. We chose this phrase from the book The Voice of the Silence by Mrs. Blavatsky to start this chapter dedicated to the third ray of the sevenfold spirit, which must fill the third chamber of the etheric heart, in order to clarify at the outset that the intelligence that the third ray brings to the disciple on the path has nothing to do with what we call common intelligence, or also with our mind. That is why the voice of the silence says so clearly, "The mind is a great slayer of the real." The third ray is also called the ray of absolute intelligence or creative intelligence. What we know and commonly believe to be intelligence is in reality the slayer of the real and true. We know that in our world, people endowed with great intellectual capacity, people who have dedicated their lives to scholarship and culture, usually are also called and recognized as very intelligent. For example, how many times don't we hear or make comments about the intelligence of others, correlating it to their profession, their academic training, their literary or artistic production? When we refer to a gifted intellectual capacity, we are correct in the terms just mentioned. However, in terms of what we are trying to convey of how the new ability relates to the universal power of the third ray of the spirit, then it is also true to say that the creative intelligence has no direct relation with our intellectual capacity. Even a simple but sober analysis about the limits of ordinary intelligence will recognize that the common intellectual faculty is often not able to provide answers to countless day-to-day practical situations in which its theoretical framework does not find concrete application. This alone should already be able to indicate to us the limits of the common intellectual capacity compared to the broader vision of what the creative intelligence should be. Therefore, what is creative intelligence as a faculty of the third ray of the spirit? In a text from the spiritual school, we find the following definition. Intelligence is the sum of everything that has been accomplished in us through the ages and that must be manifested in this way. When the first and the second rays of the spirit, will and love, respectively, fill the first two chambers of the etheric heart, then they are also enabled to penetrate the first two energy centers in the head sanctuary, the crown and brow chakras, so that they also directly modify the activity of the hemispheres of our brain, the left and the right, which must also manifest a new activity based on a new will and a new understanding based on absolute love. The result of this double activity, both in the heart and in the head, is the synthesis of a new creative faculty that we call creative intelligence, which is manifested by the activity of the third ray of the spirit. The new intelligence finds its foothold in the creative centers of the sanctuary of the head and unites the impulse received from the first and second rays to the faculty manifested by the third ray. Thus, with the joint action of the first three rays, the three chakras in the sanctuary of the head, crown, brow, and throat, as well as the corresponding glands of internal secretion linked to them, pineal, pituitary, and thyroid, start to function in a whole new way. From that moment on, one can speak of the birth of a new consciousness and a new creative faculty. However, this new consciousness does not manifest all at once, but gradually. Therefore, in the school, we speak of an organic process of the birth and growth of that new consciousness, or new soul. The third ray of the spirit is also directly related to vision, inner vision, that manifests itself from the inside out and allows the creation, or rather the recreation, of the entire reality of life. For this reason, we can read in Revelation that John, the prototype of the disciple in the process of inner transformation, at a given moment was able to see a new heaven and a new earth. When we analyze the text of Revelation, we can clearly recognize the symbol of the sevenfold spirit with its rays in the angel with the seven stars in its right hand. And as John, the prototype of the disciple on the path, proceeds in the process, the third ray fills his etheric heart and also the centers of his head sanctuary. So, by this influence, he sees, that is, he perceives and experiences consciously the activities of the first two rays, which are also already at work in his being, will and love, a new heaven and a new earth. Also means here the union of the impulse of the ray of will, the new power of ideation and of understanding based on the river of love, a new power of generation which merge to become one new reality in constant creation and manifestation. Another important aspect is to understand that the human mental body should be made up of two parts, one part relating to concrete thought and the other to abstract thought. In the spiritual school and in the universal teaching, we learn that the mental body of the human being, at the stage in which we are now, in our manifestation, is not yet complete. With that, we want to indicate that the human being has only the first half, that is, the concrete mental body. And for many, it is still in the process of formation. Therefore, the vast majority of humanity does not yet have the second half of the mental body, the one that should give substance and basis to abstract conscious thought, because this body will have to be formed by the cooperation between the nucleus of the absolute being in the center of the human being, and by the entrance of the third ray of the spirit into the sanctuary of the head. Many people have some flashes of abstract thinking, like flashes of lightning, like images of a living and complete thought. Those flashes are clearly distinguished from the multitude of thought images that circulate through the concrete mental body, which are characterized by their material nature and fragmentation. These impulses testify to a latent intelligence, to an intuitive intelligence that from time to time emerges as an instantaneous synthesis of everything that is recorded in the magnetic fields of the microcosm that we inhabit as human beings. However, this also demonstrates that this receptive intuitive faculty is only a pale image of what true higher intelligence should be when the abstract mental body is finally built and fully functioning. Many attempts have been made to develop this activity of higher thought, of the higher intelligence of the abstract mental body, through training and exercises that use as a basis the capacity of common thought, even when taken to its limits. It so happens that the result of all this, that is, of an attempt to develop the occult capacities of higher thought from the much vaunted, not yet used, part of our brain, without the indispensable power of the third ray of the sevenfold spirit, will always produce only a more developed replica of concrete thought itself, bound and controlled by the egocentric consciousness, and never the new and free faculty of higher thought. At this point, perhaps you might be wondering why we bring these ideas in this chapter and how they relate to our practical lives, and above all, with the process of fundamental transformation of consciousness and life. First of all, we wanted to demonstrate that the possession or lack of a gifted intellect does not directly correlate with the possibility of treading a spiritual path. Second, we also had in mind to demonstrate that the training of the intellectual faculties, to which we give the generic name of concrete thought, is not something that allows us to go beyond the borders of our own eye consciousness, because that would be like spinning around in a gigantic labyrinth of mirrors, lost in one image and then another, believing piously, now in this image, now in that, as if they were a true exit, when in reality they are nothing more than illusory images. We believe that throughout this chapter, we have already had the opportunity to present some elements for reflection in this regard. However, there is one more big trap for everyone who tries to walk a spiritual path, for a sincere seeker of the truth. It is about the danger of being enchanted, and even of getting lost with the accumulation of esoteric knowledge. The esoteric world is a veritable academic sea. It is practically infinite, as much in length as in depth. We can spend whole lives immersed and marveling at its images, symbols, mysteries, concepts, visions, and perspectives. Undoubtedly, esoteric knowledge, knowledge of inner reality, is of incalculable value to humanity, especially to the humanity of the Western world, which today is perhaps experiencing one of the periods of greatest material density in its thought. Esoteric knowledge works as a counterweight, balancing human thought and mind, and preventing, especially in our case, that we shipwreck in the total materialism of our concrete thought. Therefore, dear reader, thirdly, we warn that the risk of accumulation of unused esoteric knowledge is one of the most paralyzing factors on the spiritual path, because the only use of all the teaching that the great ones of the spirit revealed is for it to be put into practice. A liberating teaching, when it is not put into practice, becomes a judgment for the one who knows it and who does not practice it. This is why the spiritual schools of all times have always been very cautious about what they reveal, not because they wanted to cover themselves with a veil of mystery, but because what is revealed and not transmuted, instead of releasing, shackles. We conclude this chapter with a brief reflection on the practicality of true intelligence. We live in a world that encourages people to distance themselves more and more from real life. We're not only talking here about the extremely fast-paced aspects of life, the modern problems, the customs that have reduced contact and relationships between people, but also the incredible speed with which the human mind is increasingly focused on virtual worlds. There are many people who practically live isolated in their minds, in an apparent and continuous virtual dialogue with others, but in reality, in an increasing concentration of their thought on an internal dialogue, on the construction of an individual virtual reality, of an image of themselves, as if their mind could inhabit only this virtual reality and dispense with its physical existence. They give the impression that they would be happy if their thoughts could gain wings, abandoning the heavy burden of their material body, concentrating only on the spheres of virtual existence. In this way, modern human beings, enchanted by the unprecedented availability of all kinds of information, run the risk of forgetting that their material body and its energetic vehicles form a perfectly built alchemical laboratory, endowed with a great intelligence, and that they cannot do without this laboratory if they aspire to a true transformation of their consciousness, which is only possible through the transformation of their concrete and organic life. In our days, we witness a growing lack of care with sleep and with a healthy diet, as well as the use of substances harmful to health, and also those that alter the functioning of consciousness and metabolism. All these are proofs that at this moment, the mentality of the Western human being may have reached the height of its material development. In this way, the words of Mrs. Blavatsky gain a double meaning, very important for all of us. For the concrete and extremely materialized mind of the Western human being not only become the slayer of the real, in the highest sense of the word, but also can become the slayer of real life, material existence, and the organic human apparatus in its function as a sophisticated mixing vessel of spirit and matter, an essential organic laboratory for the alchemical transmutation of consciousness and life. Creative intelligence, manifested by the action of the third ray of the spirit in the human being, is the first great power of synthesis that can be manifested in it, because it brings the image of the universal archetype into the human being, and the clarity of understanding the universal purpose of existence. Based on this living image and this new faculty of understanding, human beings can then turn to the reality of their life and start the process of structural transformation. However, this transformation will never be something theoretical or a projection of our common mind, but something that will demand the conscious collaboration of all our being. Therefore, as the teaching of the spiritual school tells us, we can only utter the liberating word with the effective sacrifice of our being. We must not desire, want, imagine, or imitate this sacrifice, but silently follow the voice of the new faculty of the soul. We must follow the light of this divine intuition of the soul. This light does not speak to ourself, but appeals to our intelligence. And intelligence is the sum of all that the centuries have accomplished in us. A simple example might help us understand this better. We already said that all our thinking is based on the concrete mental body and on the thought images that circulate in it. In this sense, we can easily imagine a chair because our mind has already stored its mental image, although each one of us will surely imagine a chair quite different from the others. However, if now, by surprise, we ask a group of people to imagine a fictitious object using a meaningless word, which is not even in the list of search robots, such as Sprovinsky. They would certainly be without elements of mental construction and would try to create an image from the elements, small building blocks and mental concepts that we have stored in the toolbox of our concrete mental body. The same is true of the world of abstract thought. For concrete and material thought, which is therefore also controlled by our egocentric consciousness, the world of abstract thought is as unimaginable as a fictitious word. For this reason, it would be childish to try to capture, embrace, or even retain the concepts of the world of higher thought, which lie beyond the veil of the perception of the eye consciousness, with the devices and instruments proper to this eye-centered state of consciousness. Our conclusions would have the same practical value as a non-existent word. In reality, the transformation that must take place through a spiritual path is just the opposite. As we said, our innate impulse is to grasp all images, even those that are clearly beyond our cognitive capacity, through our material reasoning, our concrete mental body. And so, we try to develop our faculty of thought of higher intelligence. In this way, we try to manifest the higher by developing the lower. As we have already seen, this is impossible. The true superior organic development, however, must start from the superior, which thus transforms the inferior. So, is the abstract mental body that will be able to inspire and vivify the concrete mental body, transmitting the ability to reflect the original image, the living image of the world of the spirit, as a reflection that is understandable in the material world. In the universal teaching, we learn that the ether, that is, the combination of matter and energy used by the concrete mental body, is called reflective ether, that is, an extremely subtle and plastic substance that has the ability to create a static image of higher thought. In turn, higher thought works through a substance still subtler, called fire ether or soul ether, which indicates a type of living substance that carries within itself not only static images, but multidimensional, true living archetypes. That is why it is said that abstract thought is the bridge, the missing link between the world of the spirit and the human world, as it manages to capture and bring to human consciousness the images of the divine archetypes themselves, which can then be transmitted, communicated, and imprinted in the reflecting ether of the concrete mental body. By this means, higher intelligence guides and orients material intelligence, that when it is really put into practice, through life, it will be able to convert, as we will see later in the fifth chapter, into true wisdom.